All right, you're listening to killradio.org, and this is Add to Drop. And tonight, we have Sherman Austin in studio, and we're going to talk about his case and some of the issues surrounding it. So please stay tuned and don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this track from the Dogface Turmans. And everybody who's out there should log on to Kill Radio Station. That's our instant messenger, so you can hit us up in the studio. We'll be right back. All right, this is Kill Radio, and this is Adjet Drop, and tonight we are going to talk about the case and situation surrounding Sherman Austin, and I want to start off by thanking Sherman and Chantel and Lube, who are here to support Sherman. So thanks for coming down here to Kill Radio. Let's and test those mics real quick. Make sure we got them working.
Test.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Cool. Test.
All right. So you can speak a little closer, just in, so it comes through. All right. Okay. So many of us who heard about and read about the sentencing that went down on Monday were just completely shocked and infuriated by what happened in your sentencing, and you've got a 1-year sentence in a federal prison for the information that was published on a website that you had something to do with or started called RaiseTheFist.com. And so I think for our listeners, maybe we can start off with some background about, you know, Raise the Fist and the history and where this all started. Then we can get in some of the details about where this is going and how people can support you and provide some solidarity. So maybe tell us a little bit about that, what went down a few years ago with RaiseTheFist.com.
Yeah, well, RaiseTheFist.com first started. I started the website on President's Day of 2001. Since then, the site's just grown and it's developed, and it throughout time, it just got more and more popular, and more people started knowing about it and using the website. And it just got, you know, long before the raid, you know, government agencies and the FBI and even international government agencies, you know, monitored the site daily. And as the site just got more and more popular, as time went on, it just kept coming back more and more and more.
Right.
And basically, it just got to a point where I guess they saw the site as more than just a site, but a resource and a tool that was used for, you know, communication, networking, organizing, things like that. And I suppose it scared them because it was just basically effective. It was something that was, you know, being used as a tool that benefited people. So on January 24th of 2002, just a few months after the new U.S. Patriot Act was passed, about 25 federal agents from the FBI, the Secret Service, and the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, and some officers from the LAPD came to my house. I was sleeping at the time. It was about 4 p.m. I was taking a nap. I didn't know at the time they had my house surrounded with weapons drawn. They had machine guns, you know, shotguns. They had every angle of the house they had covered. They had it completely surrounded. And my sister was leaving at the time with her friend, and she noticed a bunch of FBI-looking cars and, you know, government-looking people parked all up and down the street. And she looked at them, and they were all pointing at the house, so she knew something wasn't right. So she basically ran back inside and told me what was up, woke me up, told me what was up. So I got up, and I checked the lights on my router, and I noticed that my whole DSL connection was down because I was actually hosting the website from my room, from a basic DSL connection on a little computer network I had set up. And I noticed the site was down, so I knew right then and there that the FBI was out, you know, obviously coming to shut down the site. And, you know, what else they were doing, I wasn't really sure. So I got up, I went to the door, and there was two federal agents who came to the door. So I opened the door, and I asked them what their problem was, and they asked me if my name was Sherman Austin, and I said, yeah. And it said, come outside. And I said, why? And they just said, come outside again. And they pulled me outside. And right then and there, I saw a bunch of guys from the FBI and Secret Service. They were all on my in the front of the house with guns. I saw guys coming out from the side of the house with guns, you know, from every side of the house. And I can't remember what happened. I think they said, do you know why we're here? And I said, yeah, it's obviously my website, RaiseTheFist.com. You guys have been on it, you know, every single day. And they showed me a 25-page warrant, and I just, like, skimmed through it, and I was like, you know, what is this? What is this all about? So basically, we went back inside, and they tried to question me. But I was, you know, looking through the warrant, and I was just, the stuff they had on the warrant was just, you know, completely bogus. They just took a bunch of different things and twisted them all around and, you know, made up, you know, false information just to make it look like, you know, like they were raiding like a real terrorist or someone who was like part of some like, you know, armed militia or something like that.
How old were you at the time this went down?
I was 18. Yeah, I mean, when they came, I mean, they came, they didn't come, you know, all nice and peaceful and everything, you know, knocking at the door like, hi, is your name Sherman Austin, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they came with bulletproof vests, guns. I mean, they came ready for, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they came, you know, ready to kill. They came ready for, you know, a battle all over, all because of a website. So, basically, they tried to interrogate me for about 4 or 5 hours during the time a lot of the other agents were in my room dismantling the computer network and bringing each computer out one by one and hooking it up to their portable equipment. And what they were doing was mirroring each hard drive and downloading the information off each hard drive onto their own portable equipment and then taking each computer, boxing it up, and then loading it into this big white truck that was parked on the side of my house. And during that time, I was asked questions. Like, the Secret Service asked me a question, like, if I'd like to see the president killed. And I said no. And he kept like, persisting the question. He kept trying to, like, change the question, trying to get me to say yes. And, like, he looked at me all seriously, and I was just like, I mean, I looked at him, and I laughed, and I was like, no, like, what's your problem? I mean, it's just amazing, like, the way they came. Like, either they seriously thought, like, I was some kind of terrorist, or they knew I wasn't a terrorist. They knew about the website, but they just wanted to come, take all the servers, shut it down, and I guess get information off my servers and get logs and things like that. I don't know, but they're obviously, you know, pretty serious about the whole thing. So basically, after that, after about 4 or 5 hours, they left. I forgot to mention, they also took a lot of political literature and some protest signs, too. I had, like, a big stack of, like, political literature just sitting in my room. And they just took, like, the entire thing, just put it in a box along with some protest signs and stuff, and just put that in the box, too. And you just pretty much loaded everything up into a big white truck. And then they basically left. The raid started about, like, 4 p.m., and they left around 11 p.m., I think. And
they didn't take you into custody at that time?
No, they didn't take me in custody at all. They said, you're not going to be arrested. They even said I could leave right then and there. They said, like, you're free to go. Like, you can, you know, leave and come back, do whatever you want. But, you know, I just stuck around. And they told me, like, at least, like, 4 or 5 times, like, you're not being arrested. You know, this is just a raid. We just want to get those computers and see what's on them, you know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, basically, I mean, that's what they did. And they just completely took all the computers, loaded them up, and, you know, pretty much took them away.
Now, was this before the Long Beach incident?
No, this was after the Long Beach incident. This was, yeah, May Day.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, which Long Beach incident?
Yeah, there's several.
The May Day Long Beach.
It was after Long Beach. May
yeah.
Day. 2001.
May Day 2001.
Yeah. May Day 2001, yeah. Yeah, which was interesting because after May Day 2001, I noticed a big increase in government, you know, hits on the website. I mean, right after I got out of jail, 3 days, I got arrested at Maine, and I spent 3 days in jail. And right after I got out, I looked at my logs, and there was so many more hits from government agencies coming on there than what there was prior to Maine.
Right.
And I think it was because I had some Raise the Fist flyers in my backpack. And apparently, from what I heard, the FBI seized all the evidence from Maine, and they looked through everything. And I guess, once they saw that, I guess they started coming to the site more. So basically, yeah. That happened. Should I talk about Mayday at all? Or?
Sure, if you want to. Yeah, give people some background on what happened there.
Sure, yeah. Well, it was May 1st, 2001. I basically went there to videotape. You know, I didn't really come expecting any type of, you know, violent police attack. I just came pretty chill. I came with, you know, sandals, just wore some jeans, t-shirt, and just came with my video camera. Just wanted to see what was going on. And when I got there, I noticed a lot of cops all up and down the streets. I mean, they had the whole area swarming with police officers. And I got there, and we were in the promenade in downtown Long Beach. And it was like, the promenade is like kind of a little bit divided on one side of a street where buses come through. Is where we were, where everyone had been assembled. And on the other side of the street, they had about like 50 cops with, you know, riot gear just standing there and videotaping us. And they were just across the street. And we were on the other side of the street. And they had some other cops, you know, driving around, riding their bicycles around, and stuff like that. So, basically, people were assembled there for a while, And then we just got up and we just tried to, you know, march very peacefully. We marched down the street one way, and the police immediately cut us off. So we just turned around, started marching the other way, and then they cut us off again, and they started taking out their batons. Like 2 minutes into the march, they were already swinging their batons, already starting to hit people and already getting violent. And we were just marching. Nothing happened. I mean, I even had the whole incident on videotape. I mean, no one. I mean, we barely even got to chant, and they're already swinging their batons at us. I mean, but despite that, we kept marching, and we marched down one street, and then they blocked us off again. And this time, I remember seeing them swing their batons, and even more. I remember seeing one officer who was about, like, this one really big officer who was, like, I mean, he was pretty big. And this one smaller girl was just saying something to him, and he just took his baton and just jabbed it right into her stomach. I mean, for no reason at all. I mean, she didn't even do anything. I mean, it was just absolutely, you know, out, you know, there's nowhere to describe it, really. But after that, like, they had blocked us off, so we couldn't go a certain way. So we just turned around and went back up the street, and then they had cops. By this time, they had cops behind us, cops in front of us, cops all around us. And then we got to another intersection, and then they blocked us off again and made us go another way. And, like, by this time, it was pretty obvious that they were, you know, they had already, you know, set up a planned destination where they wanted us to, you know, go through. It seemed like they were luring us into this trap where they can corner us in and, you know, arrest us all. And that's pretty much what happened. We were marching down Ocean Street, and then we stopped kind of like in the middle of the street. And the police were just standing there. And by this time, they were getting, you know, really violent. I mean, they were just swinging their batons like crazy. I remember one girl who was there. She wasn't even part of, like, the protest, really. She wasn't even an anarchist. She was just there watching what was going on and, you know, just decided to march. And she told one of the cops something. I think she said that you guys are being, like, very, like, brutal and stuff, and she decided to leave. And as she turned her back to walk away, this one cop, this one, you know, really big guy, just took this big power swing into her back with his baton for, like, no reason at all. And, like, that was just, like, I mean, I had that on videotape too, which is the unfortunate thing about that is the cops, when I was arrested, the cops took my camera and they got the film and they erased it all. But when that happened, the cops, I remember one guy who was pretty much, you know, controlling the police officers. Every time the police would come forward and swing at us, he would pull them back and be like, all right, let them walk a little bit more, as if he was trying to get us to come to a certain spot. And that eventually kept happening until out of the corner of my eye, I saw a lot of other police officers from SWAT, and they just ran right up behind me. And they just assembled a firing line, and they just opened fire on us, like, immediately. And they had, like, they had a lot of cops shooting at us from, like, they had us all, like, surrounded, and they were just shooting at us. So we had, like, nowhere to go. So we just ran towards this one building, which was a retirement home, and we were just basically cornered in. And at that point, they still had their guns pointing at us, and people were just on the ground, you know, holding up their hands. People were, you know, against the building, you know, holding up their hands, and they still had their guns pointing at us. And that time, I didn't realize how severely I was shot. I just know I had been hit, like, 2 times, but I didn't know that, like, I had, like, penetrating wounds in my calf. Not until I looked at the police station. I was, for some reason, like, one of the first people arrested. I think it was because I was videotaping. Immediately after they shot us, one of the cops pointed me out and told me to come forward, and I said, you know, I'm just taking pictures, I'm just videotaping here. And then he just swung me around and threw me to the ground, and about 3 officers, you know, pounced on me and arrested me. And then they just basically took us down to the Long Beach Police Station. And I was sitting there, and I didn't notice how severely I was shot until there was, like, a pool of blood coming from underneath my leg. And one of the cops looked at it, and then he lifted up my pants to see my leg, and he saw, like, there was, like, because what they shot me with was, like, a 12-gauge shotgun loaded with those scattershot projectiles, those plastic shells that are just scattershots. And all the scattershots went into my leg, and there was about, like, 14 different scatter wounds all penetrating into my calf. And even the cap of the shell was in there. So it looked pretty bad. So then I went to the hospital, and I got all the pieces removed from my leg except for one piece, which is still in my leg, which is part of the shell. is still in there right now. And after that, they took us down to the police station. And I remember when we got to the police station, I was there with another person. His name is Jeff. He had his arm fractured by a baton. And we were just sitting there waiting for them to take us to Twin Towers. And one of the cops walked past us, and he's like, he said to Jeff, like, "What happened to your arm?" And he said, "I was just at a protest, and the cops hit it with a baton, and they broke it." And the cop just looked at him, and he was like, "Come back in, and we'll break the other one." And he just walked away. And then after that, they just drove us to Twin Towers. And I sat there with my leg, like, in bandages that were, like, soaked in blood for about 13 hours until a doctor just checked it and just pretty much replaced the bandages. And I was in county jail for about 3 days. And then I was released. I was one of the last people released because I wasn't bailed out at all. I was released, and after that, there was meetings and stuff like that, and there was supposed to be a lot of court solidarity, but I guess all that broke down, and mostly everyone decided to cop, please, because at first they were charging us with 6 misdemeanor counts, and they offered us plea bargains to plead to, I think, only failure to disperse with 1 year informal summary probation, and I'll go ahead.
Oh, no. I just want to remind listeners that you're listening to killradio.org, and we're in studio with Sherman Austin talking about the recent sentence, the unprecedented sentence of somebody who is hosting a website, and the information surrounding that was on that website, sentenced 1 year to a federal prison for this. And this is AgitDrop, and I want to remind people to hit up Instant Messenger with Kill Radio Station if you want to send in questions. Okay, so continue. So this is the May Day demonstration of 2001 you're talking about, and this is prior to the raid at your house, where they took all your computers, and in response to RaiseTheFist.com. I'm assuming that this incident that you're describing, blatant police brutality and against you and your friends, that had a lot to do with your commitment and work on RaiseTheFist.com.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, definitely did. After they decided to, when everyone was handling their court cases and everything like that, you know, people just started pleading, but I still wanted to go to trial. Like, I was like, I mean, I'm definitely going to trial on this. Like, this is complete BS. Like, they shot me, and all I was doing was videotaping, and I have this permanent physical damage done to my leg, and for what? I mean, for nothing. And then during this time, I mean, this thing was just so drawn out that while I was in the process of, you know, going back and forth to court all the time, playing this legal limbo with them, January 24th came up, and my house was raided by the FBI. And at this point, nothing had happened with Mayday yet. I haven't been convicted or anything like that yet. And so then my house got raided, and that happened. And after that, I still wanted to go to trial. But then after I had gotten back from New York, after I had been arrested, let me back up just a little bit, actually. After the raid on my house, despite what had happened, I still continued with my plans to attend the World Economic Forum protests in New York City. So I drove to New York City, and I went there, and at first the FBI thought I wasn't going, but I guess once they found out I was going, from what I heard, the FBI and Secret Service notified the New York police chief and told them that I was going to be there. And I was just basically standing in Columbus Circle, you know, just, you know, minding my own business, waiting to begin the march. And out of nowhere, like 20 police officers just completely, like, rush us. And they just like, scoop up about 26 of us, and I was one of those 26. And they just take us on a bus, and we're on a bus for, like, 7 hours, and they take us to Brooklyn Navy Yard Jail, where they had us. And I was there for about 30 hours. And then I was taken into a back room in handcuffs and interrogated again by someone from the Secret Service and someone from the FBI. And then when I was interrogated there, I mean, they asked me questions like if I was, like, involved in any terrorist organizations, if I was a terrorist, if I had come to New York with anyone else. They kept bringing up the raid on my house. I refused to, you know, talk about any of that. But they kept asking questions over and over, even though I told them, no, I'm not talking about it, trying to get, you know, different answers out of me. So I just said no. And then they told me how I got to New York. And stupid of me, I told them I drove my car. So then they thought I had brought bombs with me in my car. So then they told me, you're not going to leave New York until we get to search your car. And I was like, why? I have nothing in my car. And then they said, you know, we can keep you here as long as we want. You're not going to leave until we search your car. So I was like, you know what, forget this. Like, I have nothing to hide. Like, there's nothing illegal in my car. So I just signed over the keys and I said, here, search my car. I don't know exactly where it is, but I described the area to them. And, you know, I said, you know, I have absolutely nothing to hide. You can't keep me here without charging me. If you do, you know, I'm going to have a major lawsuit against you guys. You know, he just basically laughed at me. And I was like, I told him something like, you know, I just came here to basically try and exercise my so-called freedom of speech, and now I'm here being interrogated, being treated like I'm a terrorist. And they said something like, well, that's your problem. And I was like, yeah, only in fascist America, right? And he's like, yeah. And then they just led me back out. And 5 minutes later, which was the interesting thing, 5 minutes later, I was released. And I was taken to the courthouse, and I was just basically, you know, released. I wasn't even in custody anymore. And that, I mean, they had just left, and then I had just been released, which was weird. And when that happened, I was just basically, I made a phone call for someone to pick me up, and I was waiting around for about 30 minutes until about 4 or 5 FBI agents came to the courthouse, and they arrested me, and they said I was being arrested for distribution of information related to explosives over the internet. And then I was like, you know, why am I being investigated? Why wasn't I arrested in California? And I tried to yell to the legal people that I was being arrested again. And they're like, shut the F up. And they just rushed me out the door and grabbed me by my neck and just herded me into this black SUV. And then they drove me to this federal building. And then they tried to question me again. But I was just like, you know, at that point, I was just like completely defiant. I was like, why wasn't I arrested in California? Like, this is complete BS. And then they're just like, you know, forget it. So they just took me to the Lower Manhattan federal jail facility, and they put me in maximum security 24-hour lockdown. And I was there for the night, and then the next day I had an arraignment, which was postponed because my lawyer, Susan Tipograph, wanted to go through all the stuff, the arrest affidavit, and see exactly what was going on before we had proceeded with the court hearings and things like that. So it was postponed, and then we eventually had a bail hearing. And at the bail hearing, they denied me bail because they said I was a threat to the community. The FBI said I drove 3,000 miles to New York to carry out my alleged plot to blow things up, and on the way back I was going to stop off at Salt Lake City and then, like, blow up the Olympics. And they said I was a man on a mission, and that, you know, I was basically a terrorist. And he was accusing me of, like, all this, like, bogus stuff. And, like, they were just building up this case to make it look like they were pretty much justified in doing what they did.